To answer is human, to question is divine. Welcome to the world of the Hidden Gateway, an exhilarating podcast exploring the concepts humans have been struggling with since the dawn of existence, such as, who are we? Is there such a thing as good and evil, or are they arbitrary constructs? Does the paranormal exist? How can we evolve to a higher state? Can our mind influence what we term as reality? Providing a transcendental approach combined with hard-nosed humanistic analysis, we invite you on a journey to question your worldview in this theater of life. Join our host, Justin Williams, as he explores the outer realms of faith, the supernatural, human potential, and even our concepts of the universal creator with a fascinating array of guests. This is the unseen world, magical, mysterious, and mystical, where your only limitation is your imagination. This is the Hidden Gateway.
Welcome to another episode of the Hidden Gateway podcast. As always, I am your host, Justin Williams. Today's guest is Dr. Catherine Ford. Dr. Ford has been practicing advanced psychotherapy for over 20 years, helping people understand how to embrace authenticity in life and relationships. Her main lesson is that your ability to maintain openness and tolerate discomfort will lead you to healthy relationships and remove toxic ones. Today, we'll be chatting about how to spot the beginnings of toxicity and determine whether to continue or leave that situation, and how to become a better version of yourself in order to attract better in your life. We'll also delve deeply into common relationship pitfalls that both single people and couples fall into. Whether you're single and trying to navigate the complex dating world, or in a committed relationship but struggling with your partner, you'll learn techniques to grow, evolve, and begin to create healthy relationships. Dr. Catherine Ford, welcome to the Hidden Gateway podcast. How are you doing?
Thanks, Justin. I'm well. Good to be with you today.
Great. So, hey, you are a relationship expert. This is a conversation I've been looking forward to having with you. And, you've been doing it, like I said, for well over 20 years. And before we kind of dive into things, if you could, you know, give our listeners a brief background about yourself. I know I mentioned a few things in the intro, but just a few things, if you would.
Sure. I think I have always noticed that there was something particularly interesting about human relationships, and that, you know, I think a lot of us when we're a kid have one particular thing that we're fascinated by. And for me, it was that special spark that I would see between myself and somebody else, or between two people sometimes. And I think as I went through medical school, I planned to become a therapist. And when I did become a therapist, I quickly felt that I was, by seeing a person one-on-one, which is what most therapists do, I was missing part of the picture. And so I started experimenting with bringing in people's partner early on just to meet them, and realized that indeed I was missing part of the picture, and pretty quickly decided that I could have more impact. I would be able to help people a lot more if I was working with their significant other, assuming they had somebody like that in their lives. And that's what I've been doing, and only doing. I really only now work with people two at a time or more. So that has been my life's work.
Very good. Excellent. So tell me about the Aperture, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, therapy that you offer. Okay.
Yeah. So as I was watching couples interacting, I increasingly became aware of the difference between trying to think about what was going on with them versus just paying attention to what was happening in the room. I sort of simultaneously was trained in traditional psychiatry and psychology at Stanford, but when I came to California to do that, it was California. And so I also got quickly exposed to yoga, meditation practices, things like that. And so throughout the 4 years of training, I was really being trained in both of these things. I was going to my meditation sessions and learning about focusing my awareness and being in the present moment. And then I was learning about how to think about human beings and their problems and their feelings in my psychiatry training. So as I'm sitting with couples, I'm playing with where to put my attention for the biggest effect. And increasingly, I began to notice that I was sitting in front of two people that were very well-intentioned, usually very much loving each other, wanting to connect. And it was like there's something in the way. And so I started to decrease the amount of thinking I was doing about things like how did they grow up and what was their communication style. And I moved more into just feeling what's the connection between them. And more I started to focus on this is about openness. And then and now I feel like, well, duh, of course it's about openness, but I think it's the thing that we look past. And so aperture being kind of the word that we use sometimes in photography for openness. One day I was describing what I was looking at to one of my couples, and I said, you know, it's like there's an aperture between the two of you. And it really worked for them. And then I started using that word more. But really what aperture means is emotional openness.
Okay.
And when I say we look past it, what I mean by that is in a certain way, once you get the idea of focusing on your openness to somebody as you're interacting with them, it does sort of seem like, well, of course, that's where the main show is. But people, therapists and couples look past this when they're trying, especially in a difficult moment. Our brains get very busy trying to figure out, what do I do now? And what does this have to do with what happened yesterday? And what does this have to do with my childhood? And it's a distraction from the main event, which is really about, do I feel open right now? And what's my sense of this other person's openness? And if you stay in tune with that, it's like following the North Star, and you don't go so far off track.
Okay. So open. Now, can you kind of break that down? Like, what does that look like if someone is open? So you know, I've been married now for 15 years. And when I think of my relationship with my wife, I think we're open. We have open communication. We both make ourselves very vulnerable to each other. We right. put our, you know, each other's needs before our own. Am I on the right path there?
Yes, you're talking about what I would call chronic openness. In other words, you're describing in general how you are with your wife and how she is with you, right? In general, right. You're open to each other. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is not what does this look like, but what does this feel like? And I'm talking about the in the moment, moment to moment changes. In other words, people might say, well, Catherine's a very open person, right? And hopefully in general, that's true. However, what's important as I'm interacting with another person, you right now, is in each moment, how open am I? And that varies from moment to moment. And one of the ways people go astray is that they're trying to reference these generalities of what they know about the other person. And thus, when they're in a conversation with somebody they care about and that person closes down, there's a feeling to that. And it can be very alarming if you're thinking, uh-oh, I've made a mistake. I thought this person was open to me. Now they're closed. But in fact, we're all constantly opening and closing. What I'm talking about is the ability to arrive in the present moment and really pay attention to open or close, knowing that in a difficult conversation between two people that care about each other, you're not going to stay open the whole time. You're going to open and close and open and close. And in fact, as I open more, you're likely to open more. On the other hand, if I start to close down, you're probably going to close down a little bit too. And once couples understand that and understand that we're talking about the in-the-moment openness, and the reason that's so important is it helps you navigate the conversation. You're going to do different things. If you say something to your wife and she opens wide to you, it's a whole different moment than if you say something to her and she kind of closes down. Now you know you're going to have to slow down. You're going to have to kind of maybe get her ready for this conversation. Maybe you caught her off guard. And so it informs how you move through the conversation. How you move through the conversation moment to moment is how you construct a relationship. It's not something you construct in the abstract by, well, we have these goals. It's good to have goals. It's good to have a vision. but really everything that happens in the relationship is happening present moment. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I better understand now how that ties into the awareness or the meditation that you experience, you know, and meditation is something I've been doing. I kind of got into it before we hit record, but that's something I got into last year and it's been life-changing for me. And for me, it's, you know, not only having that awareness, but observing as well, you know, and it kind of sounds like that's what you're saying in a relationship with someone, being able to observe. Yeah. And then, like you said, it will guide you. And then I thought, okay, then you have more control, which essentially leads to a healthier relationship, I guess, with anyone. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Very good. Very good. So let's talk about love. What does love really look like in a successful relationship?
So my favorite way of relating to that, and the one that I really believe in, is love really is about holding the other person's needs and interests in the same way that you hold your own. So when people are often asking, well, how do I know this other person loves me? Well, there's chemistry, there's sexual excitement, there's having the same interests. That's not what love is. Those things are important. But what love is when you are able simultaneously to hold your own interests and another person's. Many people first get a really strong hit of that when they have kids. There's something that kicks in when you have kids that makes it very apparent that you're holding your kids' interests, maybe even above your own. But between couples, it's that sense of not letting go of yourself. Real love is not that you're constantly being unselfish. That's not really what I mean. What I mean is that both of you care about both of your interests and you work together as a team to optimize for that, to make sure that both of your needs are being met. To me, that's what love is.
Awesome. Awesome. And then I saw where the average length of marriage in the U.S. is 8.2 years. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked at any data in forever, you know, but for some reason I thought it was shorter than that. And are the statistics still at over half or right at half of marriages end in divorce?
Yes. Yes.
It is still there.
And actually second marriages do a bit worse than first marriages and third marriages do the worst. So what that tells us is that learning isn't happening. In other words, if you're on your third marriage and that also ends in divorce, there's something you're not learning along the way is what I would say.
Okay.
Having a great relationship, having a great marriage is certainly not about just getting lucky, although there's some luck involved. And it's not all about choosing the right partner. We focus too much on, did you choose the right person? And while that's important, what happens after that is all about learning. Mm-hmm. And when people say, well, maybe our goals are just too high, you know, maybe we just need to settle more, I strongly discourage them from doing that. Being in a couple is really hard work. You have to slog through it a lot. And you need an inspirational vision to do that. You need to be aiming pretty high. If you're aiming at settling, if you're aiming at just having an okay relationship, it doesn't inspire you to give it your best shot in all those moments when it's really hard. So I encourage people to have a big vision of what they want in that relationship, but to add in what the missing element usually is from people's vision of what they want, especially the day they get married, is the missing element is learning. And what that vision needs to be is, this is what we're learning to be to each other. This is what we're learning to do with each other. And once you add the learning back in, that's the crucial element, I think, in relationships. Adult relationships is where we develop as human beings. And it's not all about our development age 0 to 18. After that, we're meant to continue to grow and develop in the world. And the main place that happens is in our very important relationships. So you got to put the learning back in there. And too many people think, well, this is what it is. And I think this is where divorce comes in, is that some of those relationships may have needed to end. But a lot of those relationships, it was simply a matter that people got as far as they could go on what they came to the relationship with, and they didn't figure out that they were supposed to start learning how to do better. And I think that's the key.
Gotcha. Well said. Well said, Dr. Ford. Now, that D word, divorce, right? You know, I've heard people say for years, you know, I'm staying with him or her because of the kids. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, that's not healthy. Again, mm-hmm. that's just my opinion, because I would think that if you have an issue with your spouse and it's gotten to the point where you want to leave, you know, I can't see someone being the best parent they could possibly be.
Right.
In that household. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. Not being the best parent they could be, for sure, if you're in an unhappy relationship. And also not giving your kids a model of what a healthy relationship is. So there are big upsides to doing your absolute best to keep the family together. But what that should look like is not white knuckling it, not just gritting it out. What that should look like is, we got kids now and we don't have our act together. We better go learn some things. And people are way too shy about seeking the help of somebody like me. We still have a bit of a stigma about going to a therapist, and we think that it means there's something wrong with us, somebody's broken, or the relationship is broken. And I think of myself as a coach, or sort of like a piano teacher. You know, you can learn to teach yourself the piano, but maybe not very well, and maybe not very quickly, and maybe not so easily. And if you have a teacher to kind of shortcut some of the things you're trying that are never going to work out, no matter how many times you try them, then you can get better at it more quickly. And it's really when people start to feel like, wow, I don't know, I'm starting to have thoughts of leaving, I'm starting to have thoughts of divorce. What that needs to turn into is, have we found a teacher yet? And have we gone to get some help to learn more about how do you deal with the kinds of problems we're experiencing? I often tell couples, the difference between a couple that is struggling and a couple that's thriving has to do with knowing how to turn your problems into learning.
Oh, that is golden. Well said. Well said. That'd be nice if they could teach that in schools or something, or parents would teach their kids that at a young age. It would solve a lot of problems. That's for sure. Now, you know, we talked about openness, and, you know, obviously a healthy relationship involves active listening as well. But what if someone's in a relationship, married or not, and they come to the realization that they are married to a narcissist, mm-hmm. right? This is something I became aware of over the last couple of years in my work and personal life. And obviously, there are all types of narcissists around, and sometimes it can be very, very challenging to unveil them, you know? You know, and a lot of people are going through this. It's probably, I would guess, at an all-time high. What type of advice or recommendations would you give for someone in that type of situation?
Yeah, I was able to listen to a little bit of your podcast about narcissism, and that was great. And it is an important subject. And as your guest mentioned in that podcast, there are different levels of narcissism. Hopefully we all have a little bit of healthy narcissism that helps us take ourselves seriously and helps us do things out in the world that maybe are a little challenging and require a little extra courage. But that's the normal, healthy kind of narcissism. You're talking about what do you do if you find yourself in a relationship with someone that has a more serious level of narcissism? And what we mean is, what I think that translates into is, this person may not be able to learn how to be in a relationship. And so, again, the key for me has to do with answering the question about learning. If you find yourself in a relationship with somebody that you suspect is narcissistic, or they're showing signs of being that, or you think they fit the description that you've been reading about, the question to ask yourself is, are they able and willing to learn? And one way to find out is to say, we need to go find a couples therapist. What do you think? And if they are open to exploring that, then you have a better chance of finding out, can each of you learn to do the things that currently you're not capable of in the relationship? And depending on the level of narcissism, yes, narcissists can learn to be better in relationships. Absolutely. And we're talking about something that's on a grayscale. And at the very extreme are people that absolutely can't learn to be in a relationship, or at least not one that most people would want to be in. And so then you're looking at possibly having to leave that person in order to have a healthy relationship where you're with somebody who's also interested in learning.
Right, right. And I imagine that could be so hard to do, especially if you're with someone and their children involved. And
absolutely. That is very hard, and I don't think people should take that decision lightly, especially if their kids involved. I usually advise people, people often come in and they say, we've kind of tried everything. I think we're going to give up. And of course, usually I discover there are a few things they haven't tried. And what I say to them is, look, you may need to give up. I can see things going on that I can understand why you'd be considering that. But here are a couple things you haven't yet tried. And what I'd advise is, let's make sure we've tried everything that might reasonably work before you make that decision. And then we spend a few weeks exploring and to see, is there something that actually might help them turn things around? And if not, then they may need to face that very hard decision.
Now, have you counseled or given recommendations to couples where one, you've identified one of the persons as a narcissist, and are they typically open to that, to what you just mentioned, or are they just very strong-willed? There's nothing wrong with me. She or he needs to get their act together. And
yeah, I think that's right. I don't favor using these kinds of labels very much. They have a limited amount of usefulness. The reason I don't favor them is that they do tend to make people defensive. Mm. So if I'm seeing somebody in therapy, I'm probably not going to use narcissists, to label them. They would understandably become defensive, and it would not be a particularly helpful moment. It would not be me at my best or them at their best. I generally encourage couples to not think in terms of people being broken, but to think in terms of relationship is hard because there's a lot of learning that needs to happen. And are you learning? Are you capable of learning? And so I don't tend to deal with things like that by diagnosing people with these kinds of labels.
Okay. Okay.
But you're right. There sometimes are hard conversations, and what it boils down to is this person open to looking at themselves? And we're all a little bit shy about that. I mean, most of us, when we come to couples therapy, we're a lot more aware of what the other person needs to learn than what we need to learn, and that's just natural. I don't know if you know about the person that wrote Fast and Slow Thinking, Kahneman, Daniel Kahneman. His most recent book came out, but his book right before that was called Thinking Fast and Slow. I heard an interview of him after his second book came out, and what he was emphasizing at that point was, look, the idea that we're going to get so good at knowing ourselves that we're going to be able to catch ourselves in our own blind spots is unrealistic. We need relationship for that. We need other people that we trust enough to let them tell us about ourselves. And so the deal with couples, and part of what's wonderful and also really scary and really hard about being in a couple, is you've given this other person a front row seat to your stuff. And they're going to see your stuff. And some of your stuff you know about, and a lot of it you don't.
Right.
When people come to me and they start telling me what's wrong with their partner, in a certain way, they're right. They are filling me in on what they've been able to observe. And what's missing is they haven't been able usually to trust each other enough to benefit by each other's observations. So one person is going to know better than the other what the other person is slipping up on, having a blind spot about. And the deal is, can you start to trust each other so that when your partner says, you're just constantly making messes around here, I don't know why you're so, chaotic. And your first reaction might be, me, chaotic? Are you kidding me? Look whose socks these are, right? And what you want to do is slow that down. And instead of, are you kidding me? You want to look for your second response, which hopefully is something a little bit more like, really, do you think I really have a problem with keeping order with my stuff? And the other person might say, yeah. And then you want to look into that and say, I'm not sure I really noticed that in the same way you're talking about. I'm going to have to think about that. Mm-hmm. And all you have to offer is, I'm going to think about it. That's not a moment where you're going to suddenly and probably disingenuously say, oh, you're totally right. Thank you for sharing. You're going to say, that strikes me as different than the way I thought I was. I'm going to have to I'm going to have to get back to you about that. And that's the open moment right there.
Wow.
That's one person being open to the other at a moment where it wasn't that easy because they're hearing something that isn't that flattering.
Right. But so much growth can come from that, though. That could be. Yeah. Wow. Very cool. Yeah. All right, Dr. Ford. So a lot going on in the world today, right?
Yes.
How would you handle a situation with a married couple that has children and say one person is open and wanting to be vaccinated, right? And want the kids to be vaccinated, but the other totally against vaccinations.
Right.
How would you counsel them? Like what would that look like? Because it has to be people, probably a ton of people going through that right now. Yes.
That's maybe the most extreme form of a lot of conversations that couples are having and other people that hang out with each other are having about how to be safe with COVID. And they don't always agree. And that is very tricky. You know, by and large, we benefit by the differences between us, all the differences. But the trick is, how do we leverage that? How do we figure out how to benefit by those differences instead of getting into some kind of a stalemate that actually drives a wedge between us that causes us to trust less instead of more? So that situation starts with, you've got to get to the conversation where you're truly listening to each other and truly open to what this looks like from the other person's perspective. So the first step is not to solve the problem. The first problem you're solving for is that when we encounter differences, that tends to close us down. That's just kind of definitional. Our brains are busy sorting both at the microscopic level when we're sorting out a virus and figuring out that the virus is a foreign invader and something we don't want. At that level, we're sorting for same or different. And at larger levels, we're sorting for same and different. And so when we encounter differences, especially differences that are important to us, like say around safety issues, that's a moment where our apertures tend to close. We tend to close down. And so what we're looking for there is getting open again. It's no fault of anybody's that they close down around anything. That's what we do. Our systems are built for connection, but they're also built for safety. And so at the tiniest thing, we can, you know, a funny look flickers across your face and my aperture might close down just because I'm like, whoa, what did I say? You know, he's upset with me. What's going on? So the trick is not never to close down. The trick is, how do you reopen? So if two people suddenly discover at the moment of trying to think about their kids' vaccinations, we got a problem because you really want this to happen and no way I want that to happen. You're going to have to, the first task is, how do we help each other reopen and be open enough that we can truly hear and appreciate what this other person's relating to? And that we can remember, generally speaking, this is a person we chose because we respect the way they move through life. We like the way they look, move through life. And especially when they're doing that differently than we are.
Great point.
To remember that the best decisions come out of those decisions being well informed by all of the intelligence on board. We're talking about a couple. We're talking about two functioning adults who may see things very differently. Can they both benefit, and can their teamwork benefit by making the best use of everything that each of them are seeing? That said, so that's the first big task. And even if that's all you can do, that's still a lot. And it's a lot more than some people can do. And so that's really, not only is it the first goal, it's a really important goal. And then after that, let's say you do get to that, you still have this kind of binary choice. It's not like you can sort of give a vaccine. You're either going to give a vaccine or you're not going to give a vaccine. And there's what becomes a little harder. Let's say you both really do understand the other's point of view, but you still have a different preference. That's going to come down to things like, does one of you feel more strongly about your choice than the other? Maybe one of you really, really doesn't want the vaccine to happen, like totally. And the other person's kind of on the fence. Well, I'm a little afraid of it, but I also think it's a good idea. It may come down to, How can our teamwork stay intact? Because after all, your teamwork's going to continue after the day of either vaccination or no vaccination.
That's
right. And so what's the decision that's good for our team? And sometimes that means that the decision that's good for our team is that I let go of my preferences or my decision in favor of yours. And sometimes that means I don't let go of mine because it's too strong. And if I do, that's going to harm our teamwork. And so it's this thing of both people learning to look through the lens of what do we need to do now that strengthens our couple, that strengthens our teamwork? Where do we go with these various differences? And that's not easy. I'm not suggesting this is not something somebody's going to pull a little flip out of a fortune cookie and they go, oh, Dr. Ford said we're going to do this and now it's done. I'm talking about something that's a very difficult, sometimes subtle process that requires, you know, what I mean by this is where we learn to be grown-ups is this requires a lot of grown-up background skills of understanding, listening, self-discipline, seeing the bigger picture, understanding that some things don't have a simple answer. So you learn these more advanced skills of the way an adult processes life from these kinds of situations and from hanging in there and doing the best you can, learning from it, and then move on to your next decision.
Bam. Well said. Okay. I know that advice will definitely help a lot of people out there. Like I said, I can imagine there's a ton of people at that crossroad, if you will. All right.
If at all possible, you don't want to break the bank. You don't want to end up doing something either out of selfishness or unselfishness that's going to put a scar in your couple, that's going to drive a wedge in your couple because you need that. Studies show that the most important thing for people's happiness when they're with another person coupled in a serious way, the most important element in their happiness is how well their couple is doing. So really, our best shot at happiness is making sure that we're a good couple and that we're functioning well and that we're looking after each other, going back to what we talked about in the beginning about what is love. You know, are we doing a really good job of taking care of both our own interests and each other's interests? And the better we do with that, the better we're going to do with everything else.
Okay. Let's talk a little dating in 2021. You know, it's all types of, I could not imagine what it would be like to be out here, you know, single, but, you know, they have these dating apps.
Yes.
You know, I've heard or actually read an article about mate poaching as well. You know, all this crazy stuff going on. Break that down. What exactly is mate poaching?
I don't know. Well, I do know because it's kind of obvious, but why we needed a new word for it is the part that I haven't quite figured out. I've noticed that every time I go on the internet, somebody has a new word for something that I thought I had plenty of old words for it.
You know? Right.
So I know what mate poaching is, and so do you, and so does everybody. I don't know why we need a special word, but apparently we do. I think that, you know, anytime I give a talk to people, couples or therapists, almost inevitably when I go to question and answer, people want to talk about infidelity, which is our old fashioned word for mate poaching, because it's a really sticky problem. I don't know if that's where we want to go with this general thing of dating, because it is kind of out there on one end of what can be super painful and tricky to handle. And so you tell me, do you want to talk about that? Do you want to talk about other aspects of dating? What do you think would be the most interesting and helpful to your listeners?
Well, I think since infidelity is such a problem, I would think I would like to get into it just
talk
a bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think, and maybe this isn't the right way for me to phrase this, do you think if it's a more a woman or a man thing, or why or why not, or is it like what does the data say? Do more men cheat or women?
Yeah, the data, as best we can have them, because of course we're asking people about things that they're usually pretty private about. Mm-hmm. But as best we can tell, and including more recent studies, There is still a bias towards men having flings, affairs, et cetera, than women. That said, there's a lot more of it that women do than we used to know. So we used to think it was very extreme. And it's neither as extreme as it used to be, nor is it being reported in such a biased way as it used to be. So this is something that men and women do. For all kinds of reasons, one of my favorite experts in this area is Esther Perel. And she has a very sane approach to looking at infidelity, not as a single phenomenon, but it's as a something that often happens in the context of a committed relationship where the assumption is monogamy, but somebody doesn't do that. And that's pretty frequent. And what you need to understand is, well, what does this mean? Does it mean that the relationship's in trouble and it's time to go find a couples therapist? Does it mean that the relationship's in trouble and really it ended several years ago and you just forgot to declare it? Or does it mean something else? Does it mean that you need to figure out that you don't like monogamy? Maybe one of you really doesn't like being monogamous. Maybe you've agreed to monogamy either with the wrong person because they don't like monogamy, or too early. Often certain people, a way of solidifying a relationship is to agree to be exclusive with each other. And this pertains especially to dating situations. And sometimes you agree to that either because you want to feel more secure in the relationship yourself or because you want the other person to. And, you know, it's best to think of these kinds of decisions as experiments. Let's try it out and see if we're ready to make that kind of commitment to each other. Let's try it out and see, do we both really like being monogamous with each other? And let's revisit this in a month and see how it's going. Because monogamy is not for all couples, and especially at earlier stages of the relationship, it's a major step. And if you've gone too far in that direction, sometimes you do have to reel it back. And sometimes when you do that, one person will decide, well, in that case, I'm out of here. And sometimes you'll both decide, yeah, let's slow it down a little bit. We need to find our way in a little bit different way, a little bit slower way. So all of those things are some of what goes into infidelities. That said, when someone has a partner on the side and it wasn't agreed upon in advance, in dating situations, in marriage situations, whatever, you know, that is a major breach of trust. And we tend to experience that in a more powerful way than other breaches of trust. It's pretty much 100% that if you find out your partner strayed and that wasn't part of what you had agreed on or talked about, you're going to feel a very strong sense of betrayal. And it's a major wound to the relationship. And then the question is, what are you going to do with that? And are you going to try to repair it? And in answer to the question that's coming up for some people, yes, you can sometimes repair it, and not always. What you need to know about repairing after infidelities, especially major ones, maybe something that's gone on for a while, is it's going to take a lot of work. Now is when you really are going to have to go for a lot of learning, a lot of exploration, a lot of courageous exploration of yourself and the other person, not just exploration of the person that strayed, but exploration for both of you. And I've definitely seen people put their relationship back together after infidelities when they were willing to work at it and had the patience to work at it over a period of time, because it doesn't get fixed with one conversation.
Wow. Okay. Got it. Now, another thing I want to ask you about, Dr. Ford, is I have a few buddies where they say that through their dating experience, they've actually experienced where a good deal of women seem to, like, it's been a shift, right, where women are taking on a more masculine energy. And then I have female friends as well that say a lot of the guys that they date and run into are taking on more of a feminine energy these days. And I know with the guys I know, a lot of them say that they've gone on dates with self-proclaimed feminists. Right. And then, you know, the latest data I saw is that, and it's probably been this way for years, more women are graduating from college than men. And there's this shortage of men for a lot of these women, because women have rightfully so advanced in their careers and advanced in the workforce. And it's more of a, if not already, an even playing field for women. So is it possible for people to have a fulfill fulfilling relationship with this kind of shift of energy going on, because from what I understand, it's hard. It's hard. How do people work through that? What do they need to discover in order to have healthy relationships with this going on?
Yeah. Where I would go with that is that it's always been hard, but here's the way I would think about the difference in how it's hard. There is a way in which when you're in relationships and you decide on either a very traditional role division or a very extreme role division, there is something that's simpler about that. So people that prefer not to get into the muddy, murky waters of working out sharing power, sharing responsibility, sharing childcare, they really like a situation where it's very, very strictly divided, usually along traditional gender roles. The woman is staying home and taking care of the house and the kids and the dinners for the in-laws and all that, and the man's going out into the world and securing an income. Yeah. So when you have a very complete role division like that, and one that doesn't need discussing, like you're just doing it the way your parents did and the way we traditionally think of it, it does take off a little bit of the load on the relationship of having to figure things out. Mm-hmm. Now, you might suspect from what I've said that I don't particularly think that's a good thing. Because I think that having to figure things out is where we figure ourselves out. First of all, how we get to know ourselves better, how we get to know our partners better, and how we get to know about life better. So you kind of, if you do that role division early on and never question it, you've kind of punted about a whole lot of the really important stuff about life. You've just decided, I'm not going to deal with that. I'd say it's a lazy person's way out. That said, what I'm not saying is that it never works to have these traditional strict role divisions. I think they often work for people, but I'm in favor of people making it as a conscious choice. So in some couples, the division of one going out into the world and making the living and the other one staying home with the kids, and pretty much it's like a 100% that way, that can work very well. But you need to figure out, is it going to work very well for you? And there needs to be enough openness and trust and courage to explore that both of you can consider the alternatives and can really look at, does this play to our strengths? Does it play to what we want right now? Maybe one person really wants to stay home with the kids and the other person doesn't. But to make it a choice that's based on who you are as people and who you are as a couple, as opposed to something that you decided not to deal with.
Okay.
And so getting back to your question about, is this worse now? I would say now we're much more in a phase socially because of some of the things you mentioned where this needs to be considered and it's not going to be as strongly delineated. And let's say you have two college graduates, both of whom, each of whom can earn a living very, very well. And let's say they both want kids. Now you're going to have some really interesting discussions about, well, how are we going to handle that? Are we going to do both of us 50-50? Are we going to decide that for a certain period, one of us is going to stay home and then maybe after that, the other one is? So you need to have those very interesting discussions. And I think things, because of these new range of options, both in terms of career paths, education, and also, as you mentioned, in terms of who's carrying the masculine and feminine energy, it gets very interesting. And you just have to be up for that and kind of, at a certain point, you have to turn a corner and realize that actually learning feels great. Our brains love to learn. When we learn something, we get a nice little shot of dopamine, the same shot of dopamine that we get when we take a drink or when we do some other the harmful addictive things that we do. But this is not a bad kind of addiction. This addicts us to learning. And when people move from being afraid of learning, which we also have a fear of it because we may discover things that we're not comfortable with, that we're not good at. When you can move out of being so afraid of learning and into how exciting it is and how interesting it is and how good it feels, that's what you need to be able to do to deal with all these ambiguities that are really coming up now for people.
Okay. Now, what about people that are in non-traditional relationships? I'm seeing more and more where it's not just a man and a woman. It could be a man and two women in what they call a a spiritual, a marriage or something like that, or a man and three women, or two, three women and a man? Like how, like can people actually find? You said what? Say it again.
Polyamory is one of those words that we're using for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Can people find true happiness in that? Can that be long-term? Can that be sustainable?
Yes. And as you might suspect, that has to do with the same thing. The relationships like that I've had the privilege of looking at and sharing with people. I don't mean as a participant because I'm not polyamorous, but you know, I know people that are doing that. What I would say is that works when you're up for the work of it.
Okay.
Being in a couple is a lot of work. Being in a relationship that's like a couple, but now there's three of you, well, that's just more work. And so all three of those people have to be open and willing for the work of having a lot of hard conversations, being courageous in conversations and saying the thing that you think isn't going to go over so well, and then sticking around when the other person doesn't like to hear it and wants to tell you how bad they feel about it. So all of the things that usually go on in a couple's relationship now need to go on, but times three or four or whatever. And so it doesn't work if you're thinking of that as simply a way to have faster, easier, more sex. That will last for a few days, few months, but eventually it doesn't become a relationship. It becomes multiple sexual partners. And that's okay too, but it's not really in the relationship category of things we're talking about. So it's back to that thing of, yes, it's more complicated. Yes, it's harder. It's harder to make it work, but if that's really what you want and you're up for that, then it is possible.
It's possible, yeah. I just hope, you know, I wish everyone well in whatever type of relationship they wish to have. But I guess like with a traditional marriage, I just hope people know that what they're getting themselves into as far as the work aspect goes. Because yeah, I know, you know, I have my wife. I can't imagine having two, three wives. Oh my goodness, seems right. Like that would be crazy. But to each his own, you know.
It's enough work. Yes. Yes. Same. But you know, not everybody does feel that way. But absolutely, the trick is, you know, the idea of polyamory for some people is titillating. And I think some people can tend to think of, well, gee, that would be great. Now I have more sexual partners. And actually, that's not really usually what is going on in those kinds of situations, although you may be having sex with more than one person. But really what's going on with people that take this concept seriously and want to live that kind of life is they are actually interested in the complexity of having multiple of these very intense, very intimate, committed relationships. And it's hard and complicated, but if you're willing to do the work, then that's the way to enter into it.
Very good. You know, I wanted to ask you about a recent article I saw that you wrote in Mind Body Green. I believe it was in Psychology Today as well. And you call out a few different things. Number two, assuming the past will dictate the future. I wanted to ask you about that. Can you kind of go into that a bit, please?
Yeah. So that was number two of a list of things that people tend to do when things get difficult in a conversation or relationship that are counterproductive. So what I see with couples is when you're in a conversation and things get really difficult, this is what we talked about at the beginning. People tend to default to their thinking mode. They go up into their heads. And one of the places we go when we go to thinking is, we are built very well in terms of our survival mechanisms to store data and information about what the past contained and then to predict the future based on that. And that's actually a good skill to have. And it helps us out a lot. I mean, when in our old hunting and gathering days, when we could remember where last year's antelope hunt was the best and go back to that valley next year, that often worked out pretty well. But it didn't always work out well, even with finding the antelope, and it works out very poorly for relationships. Think of it this way. If indeed you're in a relationship where the assumption is we're constantly learning together, we're constantly learning how to do better with each other, then you don't want to be predicting that this conversation is going to be like the bad conversation you had last week about the same topic. Right. You know, that puts the kibosh on it right away. That's a prediction based on no learning. We're the same. We're always the same. We're always going to be the same. And people start to get very discouraged. And, you know, what's the point? The proper prediction for a good relationship is we're constantly learning. We don't know how much better we've gotten at this conversation than the last time we had it, but let's see, and let's see what we can learn in this one. And so your predictions about the past are very natural, but this is where I say you need to come down out of your head, stop thinking about the 10 other times you had this conversation that it didn't work, and instead focus right here, right now. Are you open? And, you know, that's something that's accessed just by asking yourself, do I feel open right now? And then ask, and the second question you need to ask yourself is this other person that I'm talking to, do they seem open right now? And if the answer is no, then don't go into, yeah, just like last time. Instead, go into something like, you know, I don't think we're very open to having this conversation. Can we talk just a little bit about what we might do differently that would feel better to both of us? How can we change this conversation so that we feel a little bit more open to having it? And then you have a talk between the two of you about, well, yeah, we tend to talk about it as if you're the one that always wants to go to the beach and I'm the one that always wants to go to my mother's. But in fact, I like to go to the beach and you sometimes like to go to my mother's. I think we're getting a little too polarized. Let's try not to talk about it with these polarities. So now you've had a new idea. Okay, let's try that. And that's what I mean by using your perception of openness to guide you. If the openness isn't there, don't just barrel through. That's like running a stop sign. Somebody is likely to get hurt. Instead, you see things closing down. You want to start pumping the brakes. Slow it down. Check in with the other person. Are you okay? Because you got a funny look on your face. Tell me what we need to do differently so that you're open to hearing from me and I'm open to hearing from you.
Bam, bam. You know, I'm curious. Do you recommend meditation, actual meditation or any type of spiritual practice to your patients?
I always recommend meditation. I think meditation is great. And sometimes I do specifically recommend certain kinds of meditation. You know, there's a wide variety of kinds of meditation. In the spiritual traditions of the East, meditation always started with what we most commonly think of as yoga. And the reason for that is it's an easy entry point. If you're really trying to calm your mind and teach your mind to be still and focused, it's a lot easier to do that as a beginner if you have something to do with your body, if you're focusing on, you know, getting your hands together, getting your legs, you know, in a certain position. So in the ancient traditions, they would always start with a yoga practice and then proceed from there to things that looked more like sitting on a cushion. So there's multiple varieties, and I often recommend one or the other. And sometimes I'll recommend a specific practice to someone. And occasionally I teach people certain simple meditation techniques because I do think that not everything is resolved simply by talking. You also, the skills that we've been talking about here today, of the skills of dialogue and the skills of talking to your mate so that you're both open, those do rely a lot on being able to bring your mind into the present. I mean, if your mind is constantly chattering, it's pretty hard to notice whether you're open or closed. So the ability to focus right here, right now on what is happening. Gee, I'm noticing a funny look on your face. Gee, that kind of makes me feel closed down, huh? And when you start to tune in to that level of experience, that's valuable. So yes, I often recommend meditation. And in general, I would say, you know, any kind of meditation that you do for even 5 minutes is going to be better than not.
There you go. Well said. Cool. So I have this quote, and it's your quote. It says, okay. Here's a secret. Everything in the grand adventure of being a couple depends on your openness to each other in the moment.
Yeah.
Your emotional aperture, your ability to sense that openness in each unfolding moment, your aperture awareness. This is a superpower perfectly designed to steer us through the many dark and stormy moments. That is solid as it comes. I love that. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you.
In fact, I think I'm going to print that out and hang it somewhere. All right. Hey, Dr. Ford, this has been so much fun. I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the Hidden Gateway podcast. Before we go, tell our listeners where they can find you, website or, you know, you do the articles, et cetera.
Yeah. You can definitely find me at my website, which is KatherineFordMD.com. And on the website, you'll find links to other places. Like I'm a blogger for Psychology Today. So you can also find me on the Psychology Today blog pages. I will probably be appearing in Mind Body Green from time to time, as I did recently. So those are some places. And then the other place that you might look for me is I often teach with Stanford Continuing Studies. So if you do a web search for Stanford Continuing Studies, you'll find their course catalog. And I think my next course coming up is going to be a course for couples, but also for single people, for therapists, for anybody that's interested in learning my ideas. And that one will be at the end of January, January 22nd and 29th. And I think that goes up on the website maybe November 8th, and maybe goes live for signups a little bit later in November. So that would be another place to find me and find an opportunity to learn from me.
Very good. Do you practice telemedicine? Or could people?
I do. Yes.
Good. Okay. Great. Yes. Great. Glad to hear that. And one last request for you, Dr. Ford. One thing I ask each and every guest to do before we end is to provide our listeners with something they can take with them going forward in their journey. I like to call it a token of love, something that they can just have, and just some words of wisdom, if you will.
Yeah. Don't get too complicated. Ask yourself anytime you find yourself in difficulty, am I open or closed? And is this other person open or closed? And if not, what can I do to help with that?
There it is, good people. Thank you so much, Dr. Ford. And I want to thank our listeners of the Hidden Gateway podcast. Please remember you can stay connected with us through HiddenGateway.com. If you want to speak to us, you can always email us at support@thehiddengateway. And remember to always push your mind towards a better reality. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel as well if you haven't. Now, this is going to conclude this week's episode. Until next time, stay positive, stay questioning, be love, and be free. The Hidden Gateway, out.